One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this episode is one of our deep dives. We are going to do a dive from a high board into the deep end of a big pool of Bacta, swim around, and enjoy calmly discussing the great Obi-Wan Kenobi documentary that was recently released on Disney+. I'm very excited to discuss this, and I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
Knapsack, I realize there's no answers. This is just discussion. That's the other show. But this is back then. This is swimming around in a warm goo, and I'm excited.
Yeah, very nice to have some goo time. But before we get into our goo, we want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we are recommending Padawan by Kirsten White, a young Obi-Wan adventure. Maybe we'll get a documentary about this book someday. If you want to download your free audiobook, you can go to audibletrial.com/forcecenter. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/forcecenter for your free audiobook. All right, Ken, are you ready to discuss this documentary?
I really am. There's a lot to discuss in many directions. I'm excited.
Yeah, there really is. So this was a documentary that was released for Disney Plus Day, which this year was September 8th. Who knows what year it will be on in future years. But the documentary itself is called Obi-Wan Kenobi, A Jedi's Return. It was directed by David Gelb. It is, of course, I think, interesting to note right off the bat that a lot of this sort of behind the scenes documentaries have been under the general umbrella of this Disney gallery And this one wasn't. This one was its kind of its own beast, which we are going to discuss a bunch. Ken, what was your overall reaction to this documentary?
I think this doc really accomplished what it wanted to do, and it's key, and it's going to be key to our discussion. I think it highlighted Kenobi, Anakin, and the actors that portray them, and really highlighted Deborah Chow in a wonderful way, along with other things. So I enjoyed it, and you know, I was able to, you know, again, Devin, it seems to highlight the history and the generations and truly explore the return of this legend, which I loved, and celebrate the community. I had some reactions to some of the stuff, some questions about it, and to the point where I don't know how much I enjoyed this one, but then every time I watched it, I cry. So that's one of that, you know, Force Center. I think we really love, we don't just love leading with discussions around themes. We love leading with our heart. That's why we do it. We find what connects to our hearts by looking at those themes of all these things. And so that just was a reminder for me to listen to ourselves. When we say, hey, go into a movie and engage with what's there. Yes, you're going to have questions, and there's a lot of what ifs and how did that happen and could have, would have, should have that I have for this doc, but it moved me twice. That's a good sign. So I like it.
Yeah, no, I went into it having known that you were emotionally moved. I was very curious, and I was deeply emotionally moved as well. We'll talk about that, but this was definitely a, don't go in just with your expectations. Be open to what this doc is, because it is different than some of the other docs. And the big thing for me is that it is all about emotion. Not that other documentaries don't have that, but this, to me, was not a documentary about how the show was made. It was about the people who made it.
Yes.
And we did get some insights on creative process and some tech stuff, but it really was about these individuals kind of as humans and almost like their emotional experience of making it, their relationship with Star Wars. There's that one quote from Deborah Chow talking about how the Obi-Wan Kenobi show that she and Ewan discussed, that it's a little bit more about Ben Kenobi, the man, the human, than Obi-Wan, the Jedi, which I thought was really interesting and insightful, because in the vast majority of Obi-Wan Kenobi storytelling, other than, you know, maybe some Clone Wars episodes, we've really been kind of focused on Obi-Wan as a steadfast hero who needs to be there for other people. And he goes through some things, but he doesn't have time for Obi-Wan to worry about Obi-Wan. And this whole show is kind of Obi-Wan needing to refine Obi-Wan. And I thought that was like a great, fun, creative insight. But like, for me, that was also like, and that's what this doc is too. This isn't necessarily about like, how was this, you know, crafted? Technically, how was it made? When was this decision made? This was much more about the people.
Yeah. And engaging with that has been very valuable for me, you know, because this doc, maybe, maybe, I don't know, it comes off harsh to say, but it did not accomplish things that I wanted it to do. And me first of the gibbies. I wanted a little bit more of those insights. And you're right, we got a lot of insights, but I wanted some specific insights. And I came into it with a lot of those questions. And then, you know, there was, for whatever reasons, and you remember, this is still a time of a pandemic when you're putting this together, and who can travel easily. I was like, where's Jimmy Smith, Simone Kessel, Vivian Lyra Blair? I want more of that. Yeah, I wanted more of that. And I didn't necessarily get it, but I did get some wonderful moments. And just one, the example I'll give, Joseph, and we can dive on into other things. But like, you know, when they talked about the story of Leia and Kenobi, and how a lot of people expected it to be Luke and Kenobi, but we did this, and I wanted to pause and be like, except for you all did say at one point that it was going to be Luke. Why? So why was the change? Because I love the change. And I realized, I think I'm asking more of a podcast that would come later on.
Yeah, no, I think that is just the nature of things to accept. I think it's always been true, but perhaps more true in this age, that you're going to get documentaries that are made immediately and that are sensitive on the sensitive issues. And then you wait 10 to 30 to 40 years for enough time has passed so you can have a documentary like Light and Magic, where the Band-Aid gets ripped off, right?
Yeah.
No one was making a documentary the year after Jurassic Park came out about how Jurassic Park was great, but also destroyed Phil Tippett's world and soul.
Yeah, that's a great example.
Yes. Right? That's not that's not on the like the first DVD of Jurassic Park, to my knowledge, of learn how we made these dinosaurs and ripped apart the tradition of stop motion animation. That's just the truth of documentaries. I always mention and think about in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was a whole DVD series of all the James Bond movies up to that point. And they all had these amazing, totally honest behind the scenes documentaries until you got to the Pierce Brosnan films. And then it was just absolutely fluff. then the special edition things were just like, let's examine all of James Bond's watches. Like, doesn't everybody like Pierce Brosnan's hair? Like, it was just the most obvious. This is what happens with time. There comes more truth in you can't have it immediately always. You know, we've got spoiled a little bit because it was a little bit more band-aid off with the director and the Jedi and even with the Rise of Skywalker one. I think there was some dancing around the edges of some controversies or hurt feelings. But in general, we're not going to get that immediately.
Yeah, no. And it's a great reminder that I don't even know if one day we'll get the Solo doc that I really want. But and to be clear, I love what you're saying because it's so true. And it's like I really had to pull back and be like, okay, what is this trying to accomplish? And what do I want to hear? I guess I want to hear Ewan McGregor, Deborah Chow, and maybe Joe B. Harold sitting around a table just talking about the decisions. But that's not this. Was that going to be this? So what is there?
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll talk about it more, but I want to be sure to kind of bring it up in our overall big picture perspective. I do think the documentary is absolutely about things, and I think one of the main things it's about is controversial for some fans, honestly, is wrestling with that balance of the legacy and the new, right?
Yeah.
To see these actors watching the old films projected, you know, up on the wall, like they're almost like, you know, sacred, right? Yeah. There is a level of reverence, but then there's a, you know, great comment from Deborah Chow talking about the honor of inheriting these rich, amazing characters, but also has to tell her own story and find that balance. So I do think that big central idea that is there of how do you wrestle with this balance of new and old in Star Wars with the legacy and surprises with honoring George, but also making it your own as an artist. I think that is something that continues. It's not the like nuts and bolts of how did this project get made, but that kind of big picture idea, when you dig through a lot of, I think, fans' worries or concerns or things they didn't like, they get down to this issue of the balance between the new and the old. So I do think it was interesting that they took that on head first.
Yeah. Yeah, I think anytime you say that word George Lucas, that name, which is kind of a word, George Lucas. It's an interesting thing, and they went right at it. I think you're absolutely right. Yeah, some of the big themes tied around that.
Yeah, final big picture thought is Ewan McGregor just always seems fun to hang out with.
Really does. Really does.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into this in some detail then. What big idea or theme do you think the documentary was trying to convey? Kind of already started talking a little bit of that balance of old and new, but what other big ideas do you feel like were there in this documentary?
Yeah, beyond the generations, the old and the new, it comes up so many times. And I love what you said about Deborah Chow saying, yeah, I got to tell my own story. And she can't be George. No one can. But this idea of a Jedi returns in both the story of the series and the story of the characters being brought back and why that's valuable to us. And I love especially some of the stuff they got to in the end and a lot of the performers same. And I think when we get to some stuff about what moved me, this is a prequel era project in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Yes, even this doc starts with Alec Guinness, as it should. But let's be honest, this is built on the prequels. It's built on the generation that grew up either loving something they were told was bad or coming to it from a different spot, and that coming up time and time again, especially from Ewan, they're like, oh my gosh, you know, this is their Star Wars. That was very important that was at play, and then why that's all valuable, as well as, again, the old and new. I don't want anyone to mistake me. This is definitely built on A New Hope. It builds to it, but this is from the prequels to that moment, and so the prequel energy was strong all the way through this and the generation there, and the importance of it being our story.
Mm, Yeah, no, I really like that. Yeah, because that sense of reverence for the old wasn't just toward the original trilogy.
Yeah.
It was also towards the prequel trilogy. Talk about how the passage of time, you know, changes things. Yeah, I was really struck by how much of the just interviews with the performers. Again, it wasn't like necessarily about their process, you know, it was about their love. Many of them, their childhood love of Star Wars, but also they're kind of in the moment, people just kind of nerding out about their own costumes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or about the ideas that exist in Star Wars that they get to embody. So I feel like it kind of was a little bit of like, instead of just interviewing fans about why you love Star Wars, this documentary was kind of interviewing the people who just made this Star Wars about why they love Star Wars. And it, for me, it was this really interesting frame. It is about Obi-Wan, so it makes a ton of sense to start with that great interview footage that I've never seen of Alec Guinness. Mm-hmm. But it also, it sets this tone, right, of Alec Guinness is saying nice things about A New Hope, right? He is saying, well, it isn't past, present, or future. It is kind of its own thing. And I am intrigued by this character I'm playing that George explained to me. He was a sort of samurai warrior, a monk-like wise character. So Alec Guinness was having sort of respect for the project and the process. He was having respect for Star Wars. But lingering in his comments and lingering in our cultural knowledge is the fact that he's not a big fan of sci-fi and fantasy. Alec Guinness is from a time where those were maybe less than a serious, realistic drama, right? Yeah. Even in that opening footage, he's being asked, like, so this is kind of a sci-fi project, and you don't normally do these. And he's like, yeah, I don't. And he's like, was it challenging? And he's like, top to bottom. So it kind of starts out from this reverence of Alec Guinness starting the role of Obi-Wan. He is being respectful about Star Wars and Obi-Wan, but he is also kind of going, science fiction, fantasy. So you start from this perspective of a moment where Star Wars maybe isn't going to work, or a moment where maybe it is less than. Mm. And then you go into this whole documentary is a story of how powerful the modern myth of Star Wars is, that it affected all of these people's lives in such a deep way. So I thought that was really interesting to start with Alec Guinness kind of going, we'll see.
We'll see.
And then everybody is saying it worked. It is a modern myth. Star Wars now, it's science fiction and fantasy and genre. Certainly some people still look down their nose at them, but in terms of their like cultural power and their box office power, they're not to be looked down upon. You know, so it raised these great questions of why, if it is such a powerhouse, then why? And a lot of things that came up to me were actors and writers talking about choices, like multiple actors discussed their characters wrestling with moral gray areas. That's what they were wrestling with. And I really, really love the quote from Moses Ingram about Reva, where she says, the choices you make are sometimes muddled when you're trying to move with your heart, you know?
Yeah.
Which I thought was just like a great, honest, like, you know, sometimes fans get upset because characters' choices don't seem logical. And then, you know, I'm always like, look at your own choices. Look at your friend's choices. Are they logical? Like, well, he just said he was going to go on a diet. And then I saw him eat 8 pounds of cheese bread. Like, yeah, that's what we do. We don't move with logic. We move with our hearts a lot of the time. Facts. So I liked it on that level, but it also kind of tied back to me that I feel like this question was raised of, does Star Wars matter? Why does it matter? And the answer kind of kept coming across is, because it's a parable about choices, about who do you want to be? Do you want to be a Jedi like Obi-Wan? Do you want to fall to hate like Anakin?
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. And the big idea, the darkness to light thing, which is at the core to Obi-Wan's journey, but it's at the core of this series. And even hearing you describe excellently the beginning of it with Guinness, a little bit of darkness, like you put it out, but you know, he's a pro. But that's only, I think we're so aware of some of his opinions on it there, but it was a real truthful conversation. But from that to get to Star Wars Celebration, right? Like truly a journey along the way, our choices about how you let it into your life and how you let it into your heart. And it can get muddled. It can get muddled along the way. You know, I have my feelings about this doc almost mirror my complicated feelings about the volume in Stagecraft. I just absolutely love it. It's amazing. I don't know if I still like the way it looks, you know, it's just every day. And I just have to accept that and lead with my heart and move forward.
Right. Right. And if you, and I know from all of our talks on podcasts and in real life, you do get inspired by Star Wars, right? Of like when you're tempted to just lean into, yeah, no, it's bad, yeah. Blah, 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 blah.
Right.
The lessons that you have learned from Star Wars, convince you to moderate yourself, right? To be honest, but not to lead just with anger.
Yeah. 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 Be honest. Yeah. Honesty. Better building block than anger. Is that what you say? Yeah. I think so.
And I feel like that's a lot what the actors are really connecting to of, you know, Haja and Reva and Tala are all people who have experienced or participated in darkness or greed and are kind of trying to get back to this better place. And I just was kind of affected by that's a part of the answer. It's a big part of the answer of why Star Wars matters, because it is about trying to make better choices and how hard that is. What technical process or creative insight did you get either from, you know, a featured moment or something you just spied in the background? Because as we talked about, this wasn't a lot like, you know, hey, let us explain to you exactly how we did this. But there were still some revelations.
Well, it's, again, mentioning the volume of Stagecraft, how could you not? Because there was some great stuff in there. The one shot of it turning on and off was mind-blowing.
Yeah, right. It was that was like the Inquisitor briefing room, right? Just going up from a white walls to then. I don't think I'd ever felt the power of. I think I'd only seen shots where people walked in and it was blank, or people walked in and it was there. But to see that room just appear and feel how much the mood, how much it changed your mood, that was really cool.
Yeah, just the little details of it, because now we're so many years into it now already, and we've seen it covered in so many docs, right? And we've heard so many interviews, like, you never believe it. And watching it with my partner, Grace, a professional actor, she every time she sees it, she gets excited. She's like, you don't understand, that just changes everything. And I totally grasp that. But I love seeing some of the scenes in this series that had a little more depth to them, whether they're on location or a longer hallway or something. It just... You could see the marrying of the two styles and how that really worked for me. And there was, you know, once again, I always say, like, sometimes what I think might be 100% Stagecraft is not. And I always do love that, because it's already becoming a little bit of an exhausting conversation outside the walls of Force Center, where I feel I'm someone who has publicly said, I don't know, I'm one of the folks that the volume's wonderful, but it doesn't look great. I've said that so many times. And now that Andor's coming out and it's proudly not on that. Now I'm like, well, now I'm defensive of the volume. I'm like, let's not do that. Old and new. Let's figure this out.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of great moments in this talk about that. Also love, there was a great moment with Deborah Chow talking about her father's love of Asian martial arts films and action films. And I do want to discuss that, but I also want to pitch it back to you if you have any volume thoughts.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just continue to think that the volume is a tool, right? And like every other tool, people learn to use it better, hopefully. And I think the more that they can meld things, like it was really interesting to see like that, like one of the daytime shots on Tatooine was, you know, at the Lars homestead was outside with, you know, a big green screen for the back, for behind the old homestead there. And like, that's great to see for the light, you know, but then the one of the nighttime ones is just the volume. So I think the more that they can keep me guessing, sometimes you're like, yeah, no, that's live, or yeah, that's volume. But the more times that I can't tell which, the better. And I feel like they're getting closer to kind of obscuring how obvious is it that this is a set, this is a volume.
Yeah. Yeah, and I fall forward all the time. So that's why I'm just going to shut up. I'm just going to shut up about it.
No, I understand. Because I have my ups and downs with it as well. And seeing that Inquisitor briefing room creep up those white walls, that was one of my favorite sort of technical moments. And it was just kind of like in the background thing. It wasn't a discussion. No, I think we noted some of the same moments because, I really loved Deborah Chow saying that she was attached to the father-daughter story of Obi-Wan and Leia and getting into her father. So I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on that.
It tracks it, and it works also for Ewan and some of his comments about, him having four daughters, I think you said, right? Mm-hmm. And then his wee lad with some cigars left over from the celebration. And that just kind of worked, and that's key. And that's key to having that kind of perspective, which we've talked about a lot of different voices and different people come in, and including just simply a daughter being at the helm of this could add something to that, because it worked and it's all the way through. And there's some great moments, obviously, with Vivian Lyra Blair and Deborah Chow. We can talk about that. Some just really cute, adorable moments. But what a great director to know how to communicate to her to really get this story out there. And it just made a lot of sense that this is the direction they went. So even though I want to know, because this is the direction I'm glad they went in. Loved little Luke. Would have taken more little Luke too. Yeah, but little Leia, so powerful. And so the fact that they got there, there could be canon reasons, right? Like, this is easier to go this than Luke. Those are almost boring reasons. But the fact that maybe someone like Deborah Chow was like, hey, what about exploring this work for me?
Yeah, no, I really agree with that. I think her early quote was, I can't copy what George did. I'm not George, so I have to tell my own story with these characters.
Yes.
And, creators say things like this all the time. Kathleen Kennedy has a great quote, I believe, in the Director in the Jedi documentary about, like, what made Star Wars great is it was George's heart. It was George's passion. So we need to find directors who want to, and writers who want to tell that story that is from their perspective, which is great. And I agree with. And then I want to go like, okay, well, what is it?
Yes.
What is that perspective? And I love that this documentary, Deborah Chow got into, a couple of perspectives of her own life and her own experience that she brought in of having, a close relationship with her father and knowing the importance of that kind of bond between a father and a daughter, or in this case with Leia and Obi-Wan, a father figure and a daughter figure. But then also talked about, her father's love of film, and in particular, martial art films, which are fast and inventive, and being interested in the action scenes and that kind of connection between martial art films and Star Wars films. And
so
that's a very specific thing. But then also when this kind of went to creative process, but also why different people love Star Wars. I really love what Deborah Chow said about her appreciation for Leia, right?
Yeah.
I think she, in my opinion, really, really nailed it that Leia was unique for being multidimensional. Yeah. I'm paraphrasing, but she was saying, a lot of times you'll be sort of marketed to that this woman is a badass, and it's just about her physical prowess and violence and able to defeat people, which is cool. Great.
Yeah.
But the fact that Deborah Chow was saying what makes Leia different is, she's good with the blaster, she's also, snarky and brilliant and has all this responsibility on her shoulders. And she is also kind and soft and empathetic in moments. And she can be all of these things, being so multidimensional. And to me, that was like, okay, that's somebody's specific love, specific understanding of Leia, and saying, I want to put more of that on the screen. I want to, and she talks also about like Leia's, did a lot for the rebellion. It's not just Luke. Luke couldn't have done it without Leia. So I want to put that emphasis. So that was really powerful and insightful to me to get to hear some of like her personal relationship with Leia as a character and why she would want to tell that story.
Well, and her connecting it to Carrie Fisher and who she was. Yeah, it's one of the things I've had discussion. Who knows? We've done so many episodes. If I've mentioned it here before, I apologize. But that's definitely off air conversation we have with folks where you hear a strong woman character or a strong female character, and everyone from a certain generation who writes those characters, who are mostly men, think of Linda Hamilton in T2. Oh, I got it like that. And they think of her in a tank top with a gun and the glasses and not her being a protective mother, right?
Or
all that stuff. And so I get it. And it's, again, it's one of those things that gets just boiled down to, it almost loses its meaning. And I was very happy to hear Deborah Chow just kind of point that out. Like, sure. She is a self-rescuing princess. She also is all these things. And yeah. That's why she stood the test of time as a character and why she's here and why I wanted to explore the character.
Yeah. And again, that kind of theme of what do the humans bring to the storytelling? Her emphasizing that, like, yep, on the page, Leia's great, but Carrie Fisher brought so much of herself to Leia, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was really great. Kind of other creative insight that I really enjoyed seeing is it was seeing Deborah directing Ian McDiarmid.
Oh, that was the best.
Right? I mean, because we kind of joked even before Palpatine did appear at the end that, like, you know, it's possible that he's just sitting in a chair in his own home, Skyping in a, you know, a hollow head. And it wasn't quite that, but it appeared pretty close. And it's great to see her on the screen.
She was,
Yeah, she was just Skyping in on his. I love just seeing him just on that green screen. It makes all the technical sense in the world, but it also just kind of looks like he's doing a photo shoot for Vogue.
Yeah, I mean, I know we're like-minded about Palpatine and Ian McDiarmid. Like, I could have taken 30 minutes of just him going, I forgot that word. Can I do it again? Oh, my.
Yes, I keep forgetting the word execute for some reason. You'd think that would be a word he would remember. So funny. But it was really great to see a couple moments of Deborah actually directing, right? Mm-hmm, and seeing what her tone is. I'm fascinated with that because I have done a lot of theater acting and a lot of theater directing. And it is an art to figure out how to communicate what you as the director want and need while also giving lots of room for the people performing to own their performance. Right.
Yeah.
And there's some great moments with her directing Leia. Right.
Just the best.
But just seeing that great touch of like, yeah, let's try some faster. Let's try some, you know, a little slower and more intense, you know, like, it, obviously, you know, a great way to direct someone like Ian McDiarmid, who has been playing this character for 1,000 years, but still needs to know what is wanted for this specific, you know, moment, this specific reading of these lines. You know, that there's that delicate balance, and it was great to see how she handled that.
Yeah, and insight, a lot of what was there on screen in terms of themes and stuff, but to hear them discussing it, to hear him, you know, to show the scene as he's recording it, filming it. And hearing why that scene's important to Vader, why it's key to Vader, was just great to see that. And a sign that, you know, like you're saying, it's a sign that Ian McDiarmid is such a great actor because, yeah, he still wants you. Yeah, what are we doing? Let me know. I have my own thoughts, but you're here, and let me hear it.
Yeah, how all does this fit in? You know, how angry is he?
Yeah.
How manipulative? Yeah. How dangerous are his fingers in this moment? He needs to know these things. So should we move on to emotions?
Emotions. Let me lead with my heart.
Oh, this could easily be the longest segment, but I think I managed to contain myself a little bit. What was the most emotional moment or two for you?
And I had to go back. It's funny. I had to go back to the doc a third time after you sent across some notes because I was like, that's a great question. Like, what really got me? And then after my second viewing, I'll start my discussion here. After my second viewing, I was a little emotional. Grace was watching it with me. She didn't watch it with me the first time. So she was, you know, a little emotional too. She's a big Star Wars fan as an actor. She just loves seeing actors work, right? It just inspires her. But she asked me an important question. Like, well, why are you emotional? Like, I need, like, in a good way, like, tell me why. And I had to really think about what in that doc I just saw got me. And it goes to that sense of community. It goes to that sense of belonging. And there's something that I get extra moved by. Folks from the prequels, man. Ewan, Hayden, Bonnie, Joel, anyone. And you know, I wish Ahmed was in it. I would have taken Jar Jar with a beard, like the rumors, or something else. I just love hearing them. And God, I hope one day Jake Lloyd wants to discuss it again and we can get to a better spot. That would, I'd be a puddle of tears if that happens. There's just something about it. And that ties to what you and I had a different version of it, but like, you know, bullied on the playground for loving Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a thing, right? And we've mentioned before, and people out there listening have lived that. to see these people kind of coming back, Hayden coming back and it hitting him. And there's a, there was a reason he came back to explore Vader at this time and crazy. And then the fun and the embrace with the many embraces with Ewan, like, this is my brother, but I haven't seen him in so long, but that was surreal and all that stuff. And that started to move me. Bonnie and Joel just sitting there, just kind of seeing real joy that, when he was there, I saw him. Oh, I felt good. Oh, I'm so happy you were there. just that, because this has been 20 years in the making. And then Liam Neeson, man, he didn't say much, but what he said was just really powerful. And his thing about the myth and the storytelling go on. And you and I are very big on generational change in Star Wars, and we're very big at making sure anyone who's entered the Star Wars journey, no matter what point, get to join us on this ride, right? It's just something that's very near, dear to our hearts, Jennifer as well. And I don't know, there's something in Liam saying that, like, yep, 20, because when he said, well, it's 24 years ago, I'm doing the bad accent, 24 years ago, we did The Phantom Menace, which, by the way, even though I'd known him in interview, I've heard him in interviews talk about the movie, there was something extra, it hit my heart to hear him say The Phantom Menace, as if he's like, no, I haven't forgotten that film. I haven't forgotten it. It isn't some Taken 9 I did. It was 24 years ago with The Phantom Menace. And that got me, but then him and kind of ending on, yeah, I'm back for that. And you know, the myth and the storytelling go on. I was like, yeah, that's right. This does. Star Wars gets to go on. And I want to be a part of making sure others who come after me get to enjoy and get to be moved by it. And all that kind of factored in. And then the final note, I'll hand it back to you there. The weird, it was kind of a weird post-credit, mid-credit celebration scene. It was great. And we can discuss a little bit about it, only because I think we're there. But the vibes were still strong. That's not too far in our rearview mirror. Mm-mm. We were just there. My ankles still kind of hurt. just seeing that floor again, when they went to the shot and the big TIE fighter, knowing right where that was on the convention floor, I started to get like emotional just for that. Like, I want to go back. I want to go back.
Yeah, no, that was very powerful. I want to give us plenty of room to talk about the importance of that celebration tag and why it moved us. But yeah, no, I mean, I hadn't even thought about the Liam Neeson almost connection again to Alec Guinness, right? Alec Guinness and Liam Neeson are kind of they're both revered actors who've done a lot. Liam Neeson, you know, he's definitely made this pivot in his career where he is, you know, the guy who has skills and knows how to use them and will meet up anybody. Anyway, the whole Taken thing, right? That veer. But you know, Phantom Menace time, you know, he'd been in some, you know, some genre films, but in some dramas, right?
Yeah.
So to kind of have that again, that like Alec Guinness being the sort of being part of the first Star Wars, which began this new myth that is being passed down over the generations, and then to see Liam Neeson so embracing it of like, yeah, no, I got to be a part of this part of the myth back in the Phantom Menace, and look, they're still telling these stories and people still care and people are going to keep caring. That's so great. Yeah. It really had a nice sort of a bookend.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to look at it. Great way to look at it. Sorry.
So I agree with you on all the emotional moments. I really wanted to pick out the one that got me teary, which was Hayden's first shot back in the story that they told around that and the footage that they had. You know, it was great to see him up close in the dock footage, totally in Revenge of the Sith era Anakin costume. Just kind of out there on that hill, you know, maybe a little isolated, a little alone, right? And then hearing the story that, you know, Ewan's wrapped for the day and he's supposed to go home. And to me, there was a little bit of a layer of like, that stuff's serious. When you're talking SAG actors, you know, and especially like well-paid ones like Ewan, right? And like, got to be, their call sheets, there are times, there's things, right? So this idea that he is demanding to stay late, not just to watch off to the side, but to be his eye line, to be Hayden's eye line, right? So he isn't just looking at, you know,
PA or
at a PA in a cloak, right?
Or a tennis ball,
he wants to be there for Hayden. And then that great sort of childlike story is like, he was far away. I couldn't quite see him. So I just yelled, "Hello, Obi-Wan." And then the thing that just drove the tear stake into my eyes, like the salute from afar from Ewan to Hayden. It's just that simple kind of story that happens in Star Wars, many other places, but in real life, of just the like, I want to be there for you. I want to make sure that you have no doubt that you are supported. I don't want this to just be a technical moment for you of like, yep, here's your first shot. And you don't have to do much. You can turn and glare, right? ambiguously from a great distance, right? But I'm not going to let it just be technical. It is going to be an honored, recognized moment because it matters.
Yeah. 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 I love, not just, not just day one, not just part of a Tuesday. And tying to what they did, what they accomplished, what they went through. And then again, just the time as it happens, time will take you apart, you know? It's kind of real, surreal. Craziness. I remember 30 years after last seeing one of my best friends, 2012, gosh, 10 years ago, reconvened in Vegas. It was like a day had passed.
Yeah.
And it was emotional. It was crazy. And it was fun. And it was weird. And so I can only imagine, you know, to have it all be there on that shot that day.
Yeah. Yeah. So powerful. One other moment for me is I really liked, Moses Ingram saying, they're kind of a montage of interviewing people about being excited to be in Star Wars. And she says in specific, it's a dream I didn't know I had. I just never thought it would or could actually be me.
Yeah.
And that really, you know, to me, it spoke to, you know, progress. Yeah. It spoke to the power of appreciating the past, appreciating everything that George Lucas created, but also creating new things. She is the biggest new character who's extremely important to this story of legacy characters, right? Mm-hmm. And then also just kind of personally that, you know, she's honest that she hasn't had a super huge relationship to Star Wars. Like, you know, a lot of the other people being interviewed are like, hey, totally grew up with it, right?
Yeah.
And like, she's an embodiment of what we're nerding out about Liam Neeson saying, you know, the storytelling goes on, the myth goes on, who are the new people who are going to carry it, you know? And her joy at being one of those people was really moving.
Yeah, yeah. It means a lot. It means a lot in a lot of different ways. And also, again, you know, knowing what she went through and probably still going through, let's be clear, just being existing in this world as a performer that's something still to be dealt with. But to see the core, to see where it's what's in her heart, you know, and how important it is and how, you know, who knows? We don't get the whole story of what, you know, how she doesn't engage with Star Wars, who knows why. There's many reasons, but she will be the reason that someone engages with Star Wars now. And that's pretty powerful.
Yeah. Many someone's, I would think.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be sure to talk about more emotional moments as we go along, but were there any ideas about the characters, their motivations or perspectives, not the technical insights, but really the storytelling insights that struck you?
Yeah, yeah. Scrolling down my list here because we love that you highlighted Reva being muddled because of her heart was just a very interesting thing. We got a lot about Kenobi, the broken Kenobi, and that was something that Ewan really wanted to show. I thought that was clear. I think we kind of knew that from the press interviews. Even that was there. The Ben versus Obi-Wan was very good, so we can still discuss those. But I want to scroll down my list to this one that I was when I heard it. I went, damn right. And it did accomplish it. And I didn't think I need that going in. It was the Lars family dynamic. And Joel Edgerton just saying, yeah, we kind of come together as a family in this.
Yeah.
And you and I always kind of have that slight justice for Uncle Owen vibe, even though, you know, he got too crusty. He's too crusty by New Hope. He makes some mistakes at that table. But just to see them at this point and to really have, because for a lot of reasons, it's a story about Ben. It's a story that little Leia is involved in that one that now Owen and Brewer are truly like, no, we've got this. I didn't do it for you. I just think of that moment early on in like episode one, part one with Owen. I just love that. And that it, he said that with some conviction. Like, no, we came together as a family in this. We're all we need. You know, I love
that. Yeah. And I love just that one moment of I would love to see the actual photo of them kind of posing for like their Sears family portrait. But you're right. It's easy to overlook because I think it's something that if you dive deep into Star Wars and want to discuss it a lot, it's clear that, Owen is holding him back. He's holding Luke back. He's coming from a place of fear, but it's fear born of love. I don't want anything bad to happen to him. Right. So he should just stay on the farm forever. And the contrasting perspective of Ruby and like, he's got to go out there and have his own ventures and learn his own lessons. He can't, he's just not a farmer, And if you dive into that, you see like, those are two people who both really, really love Luke at the end of the day.
Right.
And that's something we've talked about a lot of like, the Ray going to the Lars homestead to me is a place where, Luke got frustrated and wanted to leave because he was bored and wanted to explore his destiny, but he was loved there. So to get to see that on screen and to know that the actors got, this is what we're conveying. This is
right.
This implied truth of Star Wars that has not really been clearly shown on screen. Let's show it on screen is really powerful.
Yeah, worked. It's one of my favorite. And I'm probably going to do a Kenobi rewatch soon. And that's one of the reasons why.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest. That's one of the reasons why I want to see them in action.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Couple things that were interesting for me. Honestly, some of them I think were kind of confirmations of things that you and I really liked about the show or plenty of other fans and pundits discussed, but I really liked hearing the specific turn of phrase about Kenobi and Vader's final battle, that specifically that neither of them had the high ground or was really going to get it. It was just going to go on and on.
Yeah.
And for me, that was such an important part of the fight because it was Kenobi choosing to walk away from the constant violence, right? Of like, okay, Vader does not want to stop. Anakin isn't in there. I'm not going to be able to talk this through with you. You're not going to be able to approach it anything else other than it's violence. It's a fight. And I don't want to keep doing that. I want to choose mercy and hope in the future. And I just, I liked hearing that specific turn of phrase to interpret that. Neither of them had the high ground or was going to get it.
No, I love them addressing it. And Ewan kind of saying something about, giving his thoughts on, why he doesn't kill him in that moment. And it's just, it adds a lot to that conversation. And sometimes have some folks cut that off as well. It's the plot. He has to say, of course. I get it, but analyzing the why is so powerful, and it was so clear, and that made me really appreciate that fight even more.
Yeah, and it goes back to I think what both Deborah Chow and Ewan McGregor are talking about. This show in this journey is kind of about him as a man, and like maybe if he's in a different place, he'd say like, okay, a part of being a Jedi is my responsibility to stop this threat, but I am more focused on. In order to ever be a Jedi again, I need to step away from this violence. And I am not continuing this fight in this moment,
Now it's for analyzing Kenobi and the journey of Kenobi. But the Jedi returns and how that is, is this make me a Jedi or not? Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And I like the emphasis from lots of people's discussions, Hayden, even a little bit of, Deborah talking about the purpose of Ian McDermott's Palpatine's call. This idea that Kenobi wants closure. He wants to forgive himself for all the blame for what happened to Anakin. And he gets closure because he's able to, walk away from it. And Vader needs to dominate Obi-Wan. And he can't have closure. And this idea that having that raw open wound that works for Palpatine, for Vader to just not have closure. I got a couple other interesting insights, but I want to pitch back to you.
I love the little detail. I think it was, Ewan was talking about the impatience of Obi-Wan and how you see it with Anakin in the show Attack of the Clones clip, but then he's got that Leia at the beginning. and just kind of that being kind of a trait of Anakin, of Kenobi that he would be really familiar with, because that's probably how he played it, and that's how he analyzed it as a performer, as an artist. So to actually have that kind of repeat might have been something I was aware of on some level, but I hadn't thought of it in those terms of just him kind of doing this, like, yeah, kid. And how that grows, and how he does say that she's, you know, she is, she's part of the fight. She's not something I need to protect in the fight sometimes. However he said it, I forget exactly. I love that there. And it all goes, some stuff you said about Deborah Chow saying about Leia, but the clear cut intentions to place Leia in the center of the saga with Luke side by side, which is something that we feel was at play at the end of Rise of Skywalker, the two blades. Yeah, that was real powerful, because all the nice words about Leia over the years are all valuable and true and real. But, Luke is Luke, and he's always kind of been the center of the poster. And this series kind of going, I'm thinking of the Bail Organa line. She's just as important as him, Kenobi, and you know that. That was really important to see. That was clear cut from them. I liked.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I feel like this is that, meme of, shaking hands and then you put the text over it. And I feel like, Rise of Skywalker, yeah. Obi-Wan Kenobi TV show is shaking hands about Leia's, one of the Skywalker twins of the two.
Yeah.
And it takes these two and all their friends and all the people they inspire. I was really, I really liked hearing a lot of just kind of Ewan's passion about Kenobi's journey. And I don't think there were like any specific like revelations, because I think they told the story well, and I think it was on screen, but I liked a lot of the things that he said about the journey. I like seeing a lot of the clips of the from back in the day in the prequels, right? I was really moved and intrigued by young, hip, punk Ewan McGregor meeting George Lucas and... right? Like, that's just fun. But then, George is explaining to young Ewan that, Obi-Wan doesn't want to train Anakin. He's not sure about it. He isn't capable of it, Lucas just says, but he promised his master, so he's got to do it, right? And that's fascinating by itself. But then to kind of connect that directly back to the beginning of the Kenobi television show, there's this great symmetry where Obi-Wan finds himself kind of back in the same place where he is obsessed with watching over Luke, right? He is held by that. He is trapped by that, just like he might have in some moments felt initially trapped by having to train Anakin, right? That he doesn't have the room to figure out who he is, because who he is right now is this responsibility and nothing else. So anything about me or myself or my journey or my wants or my needs or who am I as a man is pushed away, because I have a responsibility as a Jedi, and it's to always watch a Skywalker. And I think that's part of what works great about this show and about this journey is he still has the greatest reverence for taking care of the next generation, for watching over Skywalkers. But in order to best serve that noble mission, he needs to get back in touch with himself. And I love seeing those clips kind of together to tie Obi-Wan's journey together.
Yeah, no, well said. And also just the comedy of train spotting Ewan McGregor turn around and just kind of laughing at this George being there, like, ha ha, like it's George. I love that. That is all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it was not explicit, but Ewan expressed it so many times that he really was intrigued by a story of somebody who is totally broken. He talks a lot about how toward the end, through this journey he goes on with Leia and Tala and all the other people he meets who bring out his hope and his resilience and all that. And it really specifically saying that toward the end of the show, then he's back to this fun, charming guy that you all know. And it wasn't explicit, but it made me feel like, is this some of what Ewan fought for as a producer, right? Because they make a big deal that he has a creative voice. And is that some of what he fought for of like, yeah, I know some people want to see the Obi-Wan they know back by chapter 3. But it is a slow journey, and he's not fully back to that charming, whimsical guy until the end. And that's the journey I want to play as an actor.
And see, that's why I want this podcast doc that I have. No, it's all there. It's all there. But yes, no, there's some that stuff of, you know, and I don't want to tie it into some of the discourse that was around the show, but what you kind of mentioned about like season or by part three or four, like, come on, get your lightsaber out. It's like, yeah, that's the point. I can only imagine Ewan McGregor, as much as he wanted to play this role, he's not the type. This is the guy who goes on Fargo and puts on a, you know, nose makeup prosthetic and goes and explores a character. Like he's not that movie star dude that wouldn't roll his sleeves up. I think you're absolutely right. What's the point of me coming back? And for mm-hmm. him saying this is, you know, even for him, like, you know, I think he's had an interesting relationship with Star Wars over the years. He's always been relatively positive, mm-hmm. but there is a little bit, you know, he's been a little open about shooting on blue screens and back the day and you know, I haven't really watched those movies. I've seen some of his comments and now here he is. He's kind of the punk Ewan meeting George again. I get it. So it's got to be part of it too on a meta level. So I'm excited, but I like that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and to be clear, I'm guessing, you know, I'm intrigued if that's something that he pushed for, and as a Kenobi fan, and what I loved is, I loved him going on a journey, and I loved that there were the sparks of this charming, curious man, and they slowly came back out throughout the course of it. So yeah. I felt that I got what I wanted as a Kenobi fan.
Yeah.
I think we both agree that there are some kind of odd moments of almost exposition in this documentary, particularly about the Inquisitors, a few other beats. What is your take? Why do you think that those are there?
I'm kind of lost on that. I really am. It wasn't even what was said that I kind of butted up against. It was really how it stood a stale VO. That's not Deborah Chow in a chair. That's Deborah Chow at home in a studio. We got to put this line in. It's a pickup. It just stood out. It was emotionless and distant for me. It made me I was grumpy. I was like, why that? Why? I remember telling you before. It's like I've watched the show. I know what all this is like. And yes, we always try to say, hey, maybe someone, but I can't imagine there's a person who's like, let me watch this doc before I watch the show. It just was framed really weird. The as created by Dave Filoni, the man in the cowboy hat I got it. Wikipedia, calm down. Like I did not like it. I really didn't like some of those beats. It just made it a little not fluff. Like the great joke you make about the Brosnan stuff earlier, it wasn't fluff, but it was just distant. And I come to these to be close, you know, to be close as you'll let me. But again, there's so many other things there. But I got to tell you, I was alone in the room, and I was like, why are you doing that? Yeah, so I don't know. But I, and then end of the answer, at the end of the day, I don't know. I'm kind of lost on why.
Yeah, I think you summed it up well about the distance because, you know, getting into it and realizing, okay, this isn't a real technical, how was it made? This is going to be different from Disney Gallery shows, some of which, like that first whole Disney Gallery Mandalorian season, are organized either chronologically through the process or by department. Here's the episode about costumes. Here's the episode about directing, you know? So realizing early on that that's not what this documentary is and going, oh, this is a warm human experience, to then get a little bit into it and have the weirdness of why do we need exposition about what the Inquisitors are, because anybody mm-hmm. who is watching this documentary has most likely watched the show, and then that it did sound different than the warm, friendly being interviewed kind of dialogue to reading copy, you know.
So I
think you captured it perfectly of like, if the power of this documentary is to feel like you're kind of being invited into these warm human moments of the fun and the joy and the reverence of creating this show. And then I just got pushed out by a weird dubbed exposition about something we all saw on the show.
And it's not enough to make me stop pressing play. But it just was... It was a couple of those beats,
Yeah. No, and I have no idea why. There's the part of me is like, is that a weird executive note? Is that like, you know, an executive saw this and it's like, you got to explain that. And everybody's like, okay.
Yeah. Who knows? It might be so.
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. But for me, that was really like the only thing that was a bump from this documentary.
Yeah. Same.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk about a couple more of the fun moments and moving moments and ideas in this documentary back in a moment.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
And we are back to continue our discussion of the documentary Obi-Wan Kenobi, A Jedi's Return. I wanted to talk about this that's in the documentary, but it is also just kind of a bigger observation about the current era we're in with the streaming shows. Throughout the process of promoting Kenobi and in this documentary, Deborah Chow is centered as the creative voice and lead of the project, much like Favreau and Filoni are as the showrunners and writers of The Mandalorian. And Tony Gilroy certainly is as the showrunner and head writer for Cassian Andor. And I'm intrigued because traditionally there is an authorship divide, right, where showrunners and head writers are kind of the creative lead in television. And then in film, directors are kind of the final creative voice. What do you think this all says about streaming shows, about the Lucasfilm creative process, that we sometimes have a little bit of more of a television model where the showrunner is the final creative voice? Mm-hmm. But then for the Obi-Wan show, we have a little bit more of this perspective where the director is the one who ties it all together.
Yeah, I have a lot. So, all right, I have a lot of thoughts on this. I have a lot of questions. No, I think so. This is great. First of all, I think it was very smart to position her in that lead spot for this project. It actually mm-hmm. worked. Puts her over. I hope it fosters more faith in her from the general audience, that her name could be up there as well with those folks. You and I have discussed this before. I think off air, I call this like showrunner obsessed time, where. And sometimes I just don't love that. I don't love it because I think it covers up a lot of work of other people. It creates a false god situation. Not that the person in that spot is asking for that. And it's unfair to a lot of folks, but I don't mind it. And I don't mind it for this, and don't mind it for this doc. Because this might be more truthful. There's a lot of hands on these projects, right? The writing, the baton of the writing was something that probably you can't talk much about for this project. Though some people are out there in the press talking about it, right? Stuart Beatty's given his entire script from his movie. It's fascinating because the streaming shows to me work a little bit more like the director film model, right? Like Favreau just basically putting it all together. It's a movie broken up for me. And that's a very general way to look at it. But you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, so it made sense for this project for her as a director of all of it. Now, yes, for Mandalorian, there's different directors, but it still kind of flows back into John, and it's less of a showrunner. It's more of a director vibe for me of like the film process. And I want that maybe clarified more for the general audience, so they can understand it. So even when you're talking about the shows, the way you engage with them, like Book of Boba Fett did not have a traditional writer's room. It did not. So even though you might have wanted that, might have wanted more people to write it, this was John's story. Mm-hmm. If it had been a Boba Fett movie, it would have been written, directed by auteur John Favreau. So it works a little different. It's all interesting. I'm bubbling over with thoughts on it, but I actually really liked this. So this was a Ewan Hayden, Deborah Chow doc.
No, and I want to be very clear. I think that it's not, I'm not saying she's presented this way in the documentary and in the press. I think she was the creative voice, and that was a decision of like,
yes.
There needs to be a sort of the creative, there's discussions, but then, you know, there's one person at the top of this pyramid of collaboration. Right. Yeah. And for this one, it's one person directing all episodes, and it's Deborah Chow. And we clearly see that in these great documentary mm-hmm. scenes where she's working with everybody, the prop department, the actors, the, you know, the extras. She's making the crew speeches. Obviously, she is, you know, the voice, which is great. And I think it gives us great consistency to the show.
Yeah.
I'm just fascinated by it because I think the sort of streaming world is still in this awkward space between a TV show and a movie, right?
Yes.
For streaming shows, we still haven't got especially in the genre space of like, it's really a television show that's, you know, there's kind of an overarching story, but you know, it's a week to week thing. I mean, She-Hulk mm-hmm. right now is kind of like that. She's going through a big overall journey, but each episode is kind of like, here's her adventure this week as well. But we're still in this kind of strange space of like, is The Mandalorian a TV show where each episode he has a different quest? Like, yes. Mm. But then also each season he has a big overall quest. So there's this kind of this storytelling tension of what is a TV show, what is a movie, what is a limited series streaming event, you know? And I think the biggest thing it speaks to me is that Kenobi just never shook the DNA of being a movie, of being one big grand adventure. I think a lot of work went into structuring the individual episodes so that they were a satisfying chapter of a story. But I think that the film model in the sort of authorship, it is there in Kenobi because that's always been the DNA of the thing and it's never changed.
Yeah.
Where I think Favreau from the beginning approached The Mandalorian as more of a television show of like, I'm not directing every episode. You know, I'm writing most of the episodes, but I can hire another writer too, because it's a TV show and we're in the model where, you know, the showrunner is the ultimate creative voice. And I think that's going to happen with Ahsoka. And it's certainly happening with the way Tony Gilroy is being centered, is absolutely in charge of Cassian Andor.
Yes. It's fascinating. It gets into different areas, whether, you know, the punditry, the writing, the creative coverage of it. Yeah, there's a lot of things about it. Yeah.
And even I think with Kenobi, the story of the writers is complex.
Very complex.
Right? And maybe, you know, not something that they want to discuss now, whereas like Mandalorian is like writers get hired and they write an episode or they don't, you know, and it's not it. Whereas again, Kenobi had, because it started as a movie, much more of a sort of movie process behind the scenes.
Big one. Yeah.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on this one before we move on?
No. Other than, again, at the end of the day, it's a very positive thing to have her centered there. It was really well done.
Yeah, no, I'm thrilled with that. I think it's the right decision. I'm just really fascinated by process. And I think more than anything, I'm fascinated because we're still in the early phase of what is streaming. How does it work? What's a movie? What's a TV show?
Yeah.
You know, and all these different ways to frame it and look at it. It's fun to be in a time of discovery.
There you go. Yes. I like it. Yes.
So moving on, many moments of the documentary are the actors and the directors sharing what Star Wars meant to them growing up. What were some of your favorites of those moments?
It's just a reminder that there's a lot of reminders that Star Wars is connected to a sense of family and community, and that being one of the big themes in there. And just some of the simple stuff that, I don't know, maybe because we deal with it every week, it's like, yeah, no. But I just loved hearing Bonnie P.S. I always say her name P.S., and I realize I don't know exactly how she says it. For 20 years, that's what I've said. I have to look it up. She has some music. If you didn't know, she's a recording artist. She has a lot of albums. Get it on, listening to her and stuff on Spotify recently.
What?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. She released a few albums, a whole thing. Yeah. And then, of course, the whole thing with that, the cult and all that stuff. That, you know, she's lived a lot of lives. But I loved hearing her coming back to this. And again, I don't know how much Star Wars is on her in her life daily over the last 20 plus years since leaving the prequels. But her just knowing and recognizing the energy of, you know, Star Wars calls on people's souls, she said. And that was big. That's big for us. I think it's one of the reasons we come back to Star Wars every week as a show. So I loved her kind of not naive joy, just very astute and insightful joy this feeling. And it just kind of was a reminder. And then you had a lot of people talking about, you know, the family connections from Deborah Chow on down, but even someone like Moses Ingram, who's, you know, didn't grow up with it. It's just now hopefully getting plugged in that sense of Star Wars community. It was great. It was O'Shea Jackson. Just like, yeah, me and my family watch this. I'm like, really? Okay. I'd love some video of that with your family.
Yeah. No, that was really, what a just absolute nerd for Star Wars. I say that, of course, as a compliment that O'Shea Jackson Jr. was in the particular quote of like, I want Duel of the Fates played at my wedding.
Yeah.
Was great. But also, yeah, that was a great moment of just like sort of smashing any cultural stereotype you have. Like, yep. Ice Cube bought his kids the DVDs.
Yep.
You know, just that's a real Star Wars is for everyone. Check all of your cultural assumptions at the door. Right.
Yep.
From you know, yeah, especially thinking growing up with Ice Cube when you know, some of his tracks were pretty hardcore, as the kids say, you know.
Did not reference Star Wars in some of those.
No. So that one I really liked. Ewan McGregor always talks about, in different contexts, you know, being blown away by Star Wars and being a fan as a kid, but there was something about the way he said it this time in this interview where, you know, he said like, okay, well, we had to, you know, go to the big city and we're going to see this movie and everyone was really excited, but then it was Star Wars.
Yeah.
And it's just a great way to capture like just how it was groundbreaking, right? Especially in the eyes of a kid, right? And then I love the way he just said, and then eventually it came out on VHS and we watched it until it was just colors on the screen. The tape was so worn out. It's just such a great visceral way to describe, like, not just, I like that movie, it was such a part of my life that the media that played it began to deteriorate, right? That's a different kind of a part of my life then. Yeah, I saw it 2-3 times, loved it. Great.
Yeah, that's the dividing line, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then kind of going all the way up to the present with a little section with Vivian saying, yeah, I started reading with Star Wars books. And the moment I saw him on the page, I fell in love with R2-D2.
Yeah, that was so great.
Yeah. And then later Ewan being like, she likes droids a lot.
A lot. A lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Any more thoughts on that before we move on?
No, but just powerful stuff. Star Wars calls on people's souls. Well, that's big.
It does. Thank you, Beru. I'm looking up your records. There were also just, you know, so many charming, fun, human moments. So I want to be sure to just give some space to get excited about some of our favorite moments of human fun and charm. So what were some of your favorite moments there?
You and I both talked about Ian McDiarmid forgetting the word execute and just having this like kind of humor over that the Emperor would forget execute. I wrote that too. Moses Ingram's excitement of the dream she didn't know she had, and then that little moment of kind of being reminded how long the lightsaber blade was in that one shot, just like, all right, just remember, cut off the hand. I mentioned Bonnie and Joel a lot. Just the interplay between them was great. So a couple of other moments though, you wouldn't believe in the Gungan Bongo was real.
Yeah,
I feel that one. Yeah, just the way he's like explain. Do we go on? What are you talking? Do we go under the water? No.
Does it submerge? No, it's not really.
No, I love that.
It's a really funny anecdote, but it was great to like capture that. Like, okay, this is this weird space where we're excited to be here to capture this fantasy, but it is also real work.
Well, yeah, just a reminder too of, you know, he does not even sure if indie actor Ewan at that period of time can do this and should do this, and then Star Wars is in Seoul and he gets the set and all that's gone, and you just want that sub to be real, you want that bongo to float.
Yeah, that's so great. There's so many moments with Hayden. I do love the moment of him talking about how George Lucas told him that there's always a little bit of Anakin there, but I love that he's in the melted makeup. Mm-hmm. And I took a screenshot of it because it's so memeable of him in the burn makeup, and the caption is so George Lucas told me.
Well, it's just the way, it's so great because you got the entire makeup team that takes hours to do, and he's telling the story of the camera, but George would have been enough, but you got to say George Lucas. But it's just, it wasn't like an arrogant thing. Like I talked to him, but it's just like, you know, if you're, his name's George Lucas. Like, yeah. Yeah. You got it. But it was just great. Love that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I loved the moments that were sort of the reverent moments of people watching Star Wars projected, I assume in the volume. Watching Ewan and Hayden kind of have their riffing, right? The moment where Hayden says, I mean, you warned me you had the high ground. Just priceless, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Ewan with the, if I had a dollar for every time. No, I put that down too, of just them watching their quote old stuff. Like Hayden shows up and Ewan's like, oh, we've just been watching our old stuff all day. Oh, you mean Star Wars? Yeah. Yeah. Love that.
Yeah. Absolutely great. I loved Ewan. He's talked about it in interviews, but it's great to see it with the footage of Ewan talking about being actually scared to be chased by Vader, right? To be so into it that like, okay, as an actor, I've convinced myself to be in this place of panic. I am where Obi-Wan needs to be, where he has to face him, but he's not ready. And turning around and seeing actual bleeping Vader marching on you would be terrifying. And I just love that honesty.
Yeah. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple more moments for me. Do you have any more that you wanted to share?
No, I do like some stuff with the Kamael, some of the insights too of him talking about it. But there's a lot there. And the moment, it was in the trailer for this, but yeah, Vivian, Lara Blair, just like kind of hugging a droid, which is so sweet.
Yeah. The extremely hard force push done practically was amazing to see. So two other, one that just cracked me up, I would assume the practice motion capture, for Freck with actual Zach Braff yelling at the fake head of Freck. And if you watch with captions, the final thing, he says some things and then he just makes some noise and the caption says Braff sobbing.
That's awesome.
So great. And then the final one, just the utter endless charm of Ewan McGregor at the party, the rap party, bringing out those cigars that are left over from his wee boy. And saying, Disney's not going to like that one, but Death Sticks are over here.
Well, that's hilarious. Hilarious. But what's funny about that, watching it the second time, when we press play, Grace is like, there's some note of there. She goes, it says implied smoking. And I went, Disney did have a problem.
I love watching, you know, how many Star Wars things say contains tobacco depictions.
Yeah, there you go.
And you're like, the snooty guy in the cantina. Yep. He's definitely smoking something. Yep. Oh, one of those Ewoks is got a pipe going. Yep. Okay.
That's right. who knows what's chirp smoking. I just, that was because I hadn't connected that. And then, my wee boy.
So funny. We could describe a warm human moments all day, but we're heading toward wrapping up. So I do want to deep dive on that celebration bonus scene. Mm-hmm. What was powerful about ending the documentary with the premiere at Star Wars Celebration?
I have to be honest. It's like the vibes are still very present in my soul on Star Wars Celebration. So it's like you're feeling it, but it captures what we love about it there from our side, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't there at that particular panel that day, but we might have been sobbing like that one guy was as well. You know, mm-hmm. We don't know. So there's that side of it. But to see the other side of them meeting the fans, of going out to the fans and how nerve-wracking it is and how wonderful it is, and then have Hayden getting emotional in the hallways. We don't see that, right? We don't feel that. We're not in those conversations. We don't get to ask Hayden how he felt. So to actually see it and to see like two sides of the stage, so to speak, I really love that. It was really effective.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously there is a power to being like, oh yes, I know exactly where that is on the floor and in the auditorium. And hey, camera, can you turn over that way and see if, you know, I'm buying an action figure in that exact moment? Like there is definitely, you know, I think for people who were at Star Wars Celebration to be like, we are now watching Star Wars at home and now we are seeing this space, you know, that we were in. But in a much larger idea, it's kind of about this, this circle of appreciation for this modern myth. If this documentary is about the people who love Star Wars and why do we continue to love it? Why do the stories matter? Why does that love matter? And then so much of the doc is showing us that the people who made Obi-Wan Kenobi were not just treating it as like, it's the gig.
Yeah.
You know, the money was good. I had a hole in my schedule. I feel like everyone who made this loves Star Wars and they're thoughtful about why they love Star Wars. And then it's a high pressure thing, right? Because love can curdle into being upset if fans feel like you didn't do it justice, right? So to see people who worked so hard on this, who legitimately love Star Wars, worked hard to put their own souls into it as well, to then be showered with love from Star Wars fans and to be stripped of any of the doubt or the cynicism and just say unambiguously, there are millions of people who love this story, love these characters, appreciate us for embodying them. Mm-hmm. It is just this circle of love that speaks to inclusion, joy, connection, hope, the kind of things that the characters in Star Wars fight for are happening right there physically in the real world.
Yeah, inclusion of love. Love that. Love that phrase. Yeah, no, you just feel it again. Yeah, you feel it and know that. And that's for all the shows, right? Everyone there, you enter that world, even if you're not super familiar with it, you feel it and you pick up on what's going on. And you get to see that. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't had a chance to watch the this documentary with Sarah and I with my wife, and I can't wait to see how she receives it and if she is moved. I suspect she will be, but it'll be really, really fun to see. And I can show her where I bought some of the action figures that are now in our home.
Well, it was weird because, you know, the footage is from the panel, not from the screening. And so that sometimes they did a little trick of, you know, trick of editing to make it sound like that was the premiere. But there was one shot, a long shot of the, and I just kept, that was like, oh, those are the double doors. Actually, it was like triple doors or whatever, but like the doors that you and Ellis kept going through to go to the restroom, and I'd get nervous hoping you guys could get back in. I was like, those are those doors. And watch them leave, and I would never, they might never come back.
We made it back from the bathroom every time.
You did. Every time.
Every time. Good bathrooms. Real good bathrooms there. Anyway, what are your hopes for future Star Wars documentaries, either in topic or tone? Do you want more like this that are just not a ton about process, but more about love and the people who made it? Or are you hungry for the let's get into what really happened?
Yeah, I'm hungry. Look, you're always going to have these types, these styles, which are great, and they come off as time slightly more promotional again, that VO, but also they aren't that. They're exactly what you're talking about. They're going into the people that are making this, and that works for Star Wars and the Star Wars family, and I still want those. It's between these, and I know the Marvel ones. I've only watched the Hawkeye Marvel show because I love that comic run, so I watched the Marvel one as well for the gallery on the Hawkeye series. It's a fun kind of coming down, right? Like, you just got the joy of the series, and you're still high coming down the mountain, and you get to just kind of spend some more time with it here. So I absolutely love these, and I hope they do more of these. I hope they do one for every series. I think we got a little spoiled with the first Mando one, right? Like, even the second season of Mando, like, oh, only one and a follow-up, huh? Okay. But anyways, I want these to exist. I want these to always be there. I do, though. I am hungry for more standalone docs, real conflicts, real insights, honesty, truth, exploring some of the bigger decisions, the light and sound level doc. And I know that's not good. You know, I knew this wasn't going to be that. But I think I'm really, really ready to go bigger with some of these. And you're right, because time not just heals wounds, but times maybe gives you some perspectives, and you can go into some of the stuff. I know some things are always going to be probably off the table. We're not going to get that tell-all solo doc. I get that. But I wouldn't mind that around characters, around, you know, a four-part doc on the cult of Vader and everything about it, and Anakin and Hayden, and all, that'd be fascinating to me. Stuff like that. There's parts of this doc that actually scratch that itch. Like the opening with the Alec Guinness stuff is wonderful. And you're right. I don't recall seeing this one, that footage before. And that just kind of made me want to go deeper, which was almost worked against this. You know what I mean? The doc. That's why I was a little grumpy at times. Like, no, go deep. I know who the Inquisitors are. I know. Go deeper. But that this wasn't about that. So I want more of those.
Yeah, I'd be more than happy to have more documentaries like this one. We talk about this so much of like, how much should we be prepared for something, or do we need to, as audiences, go in and have epiphanies about, oh, this is what it is, and now I'll readjust my expectations. Mm-hmm. But, I'd be more than happy if they, you know, just put out, you know, a documentary after the fact of like fun times on the Andor set.
Like, yeah.
You know, why the people who made Andor loved Andor, and just see that. That's great. I love it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, someday there will be the Force Awakens story, right? Because we know some of the things that happened behind the scene with Harrison Ford's injury. Abrams has said great, interesting, intriguing stuff about Harrison Ford's injury. Gave him time to redo some things. Which bits of Lucas treatment, all that stuff. There's a fascinating story, and you know, maybe 2025, maybe a full 10 years.
I
feel like the first Disney Gallery series for Mandalorian season one, I think happened, I'm guessing, total guesses, for two reasons. Disney Plus was hungry for content, right?
Yeah.
And I love that Jon Favreau is just a chatter.
Yeah.
Right. I feel like he's the kind of guy that you could say one keyword to in any topic, right? You could say duvet
And then he would hold a fascinating 45-minute conversation with the people in line with him at a grocery store, right?
Yeah.
He's a chatter, and he's a host who loves to facilitate conversation, right?
Yeah.
So I almost feel like just let Favreau loose on shows he didn't even work on.
Oh, yeah.
Let him have, you know, a dinner for five,
yes,
or whatever.
Star Wars for five.
Yeah, Star Wars for five, and you rebuild the dining room scene, dining room set from Empire Strikes Back, and let him sit where Vader did and host a conversation. Yeah.
Yes.
Final thing for me is I did really like that first one that kind of broke things up by department. I am really, I really like deep diving on music, costumes, fight choreography, all that.
Yeah. See, there you go. I didn't get anything on Natalie Holt's front. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Before we descend into any more grumbles, we'll hope for more Kenobi reviews. Include us both in the grumbling, Ken. Let's end with a fun question. If you could stand around in the volume watching any Star Wars movie or TV show with any Star Wars actor, which story and actor would you choose?
No hesitation. Ahmed Best in The Phantom Menace.
Wow.
No hesitation.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. We should have gone with you last. We'll have you beat it. No. I had a comedy answer and a serious answer. Serious answer has some comedy to it. My serious answer is Solo with Harrison Ford.
That'd be great.
I love that he liked that movie, that he was fascinated by it as an actor, that he praises Alden's performance. I would love to to sit and just kind of hear what noises Harrison Ford makes as he watches Solo. And then my joke answer is I would love to watch a random episode of the Ewok cartoon with Ian McDiarmid.
This is in the same galaxy that I was in. Is this the same?
These are the bears who caused me the trouble, right? Yes. But Ahmed Best in The Phantom Menace, that's the answer. Well,
put him on the volume. That'd be great.
Yeah. All right, Ken, you want to let people know where they can find us?
I do. Thanks for listening to us, everybody. We're the Force Center podcast feed, recording on a cloudy day in Southern California. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. Our Instagram page is for you to find as well at Force Center Pod. We're on YouTube as well. We got a live Q&A coming up here at the end of September. Details to follow. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We are available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and more. You can get merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And if you so choose, you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. From there, you can get to our Discord and discuss Star Wars with fans every day. You can follow me at KatNapsok or go to my website, KatNapsok.com. Be confirming the dates soon, but looks like I'll be doing some comedy in New York and Seattle very soon. So awesome. Look for that. Look for that. Joseph, where can they follow and find you?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media. Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can visit my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all of my comedy adventures. I'll be in Portland the weekend of October 7th through the 9th for the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival, where a short film I made will be playing. Also, I want to make a specific request for Force Center listeners to check out my personal YouTube channel. If you go to YouTube and you search Joseph Scrimshaw, it will pop up. I would like to get my personal YouTube channel monetized again. And of course, that requires some more subscribers and some more hours watching. There are a lot of comedy videos, some audio versions of my podcast, Obsessed. So if you're a YouTube type person and if you have some time and want to help me out, that would be deeply appreciated. Thank you so much for everything that you do for us, wonderful listeners. For now, for myself, for Ken, for Ewan McGregor's Death Sticks, this has been Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays.
Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.